I like America. I have played around every sleppy, happy hunting ground, and I find America okay.
The Australian novelist John Birmingham and the late Neville Shute both wrote books imagining a time without the United States. Hello, Anthony Fennell here, and welcome to Future Tense. I know the US is often the worst as well as the best of everything, but imagine what a boring world it would be without the Americans. I mean, let's take politics for example.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I ask you to embrace new ideas rooted in enduring values, opportunity for all, responsibility from all, and a community of all Americans.
Khrushchev predicted, "We will bury you." But in the West today, we see a free world that has achieved a level of prosperity and well-being unprecedented in all human history.
Americans just seem to do that big political rhetorical stuff so well. Now have a listen to this. Here's the incumbent US president speaking in a YouTube message posted in early 2009. In fact, we played this grab back in the first ever episode of Future Tense. Let's have a listen, because today's show is a catch-up on that whole notion of the internet president, Barack Obama, as a man who is going to lead us all into a new era of participatory democracy. Government 2.0, as it used to be called. Have a listen.
When I'm sworn in as the President of the United States, it will be because of you. You built the largest grassroots movement in history and shaped the future of this country. And the movement you built is too important to stop growing now. Today, I'm pleased to announce the creation of Organizing for America, the organization that will build on the movement you started during the campaign. Since the election, hundreds of thousands of you have shared your ideas about how this movement should move forward, and we've listened carefully.
So, just to be clear, this week's Future Tense is really about trying to answer two separate but interconnected questions. Whatever happened to all that hope people had back in 2009 about the power of the internet to change government? And why did people stop calling Barack Obama the internet president?
To answer your question about Obama, you know, I think social media has exploded in use since his 2008 campaign. And social media continues to be a very important way that people on both the left and the right in American politics are communicating and mobilizing their supporters. I think what maybe threw cold water on the Obama people's efforts was that a lot of them were very liberal and I think had pretty high expectations of what he would do and became disappointed when he made compromises that he felt were necessary to get things done, whether it was the healthcare law or other things.
That's Bill Adair, a Washington-based political journalist who edits the Pulitzer Prize-winning website PolitiFact. And as you can imagine, he's been pretty busy these past few months.
I think the Obama campaign in the election was extremely sophisticated. And having visited their headquarters in Chicago and seen the way they work, in the way that they produced advertising, the way they produced messages for social media, I just think they were very advanced. And so advanced that we don't know about a lot of the things they did because they were micro-targeted. And so they were not meant for the mass media, and they didn't necessarily tell us about them.
So here's a couple of points we can scribble on the whiteboard straight away. One, we know that there was a lot of expectation back in early 2009 about how the internet and social media would reshape politics, given the amazing digital success the Obama team had had during the 2008 election campaign. And two, we also know, thanks to Bill Adair, that from a campaign perspective, they're still very much at the top of their game. But I guess the question for this show is whether the political process in the US has changed substantially in the last 4 years as the digital revolution has continued apace. And if so, how? Two voices we heard in our 2009 program were Mika Sifri and Michael Turk. We'll catch up with them shortly. But first, the perspective of leading media theorist and Future Tense favourite, Ethan Zuckerman.
Well, there's a very popular phrase that's sort of been brought about by a Republican activist, Sarah Palin, you know, has that hope and change working for you? And I think there's, you know, perhaps the sort of understandable skepticism that comes late into the first term of a presidency, where you look at some of the promises that may have been made or may have been implicitly made and find yourself sort of asking, you know, did that really come to pass? I think it's obviously a mixed record for Obama. I think in some ways it's worth talking about what Obama did particularly well in using the internet. And I think what he did very, very well in campaigning was sort of say, look, our goal is pretty simple. I like the White House, and therefore we need to raise some money and we need to raise some attention and we need lots of different ideas on it. And different people came across with different ideas. And whether that was, you know, Shepard Fairey making a particularly striking poster, whether that was will.i.am recording a rap song in a video, whether it was hundreds of supporters trying all sorts of different ways to promote Obama online, it was a really nice chance for many, many different people to put sort of ideas forward to support the campaign. And I think many people hope that that sort of form of online participation would move into the governance realm. And it turns out that online participation is just much harder in the governance realm. It's very, very hard to sort of say, okay, let's try 1,000 different things, and then the one that sort of rises to the top, we'll go ahead and implement it. The very limited way in which the Obama administration tried it at first was sort of putting up a website and asking, you know, what people would like to see as the presidential priorities for the first 100 days. And one of the first things that happened in that process is that people started proposing things that were very, very unlikely to come to pass. And what floated to the top of that list was decriminalization and legalization of marijuana, which the president responded to and basically said, you know, guys, we're not going to do that. And I think it was sort of a sense that it's a very different thing to be campaigning versus governing. You know, perhaps it's just fine for someone to be saying, you know, I hope that if Barack Obama is elected, he'll decriminalize marijuana. But when it actually comes into the governance process and someone sort of says, we want to make this a top priority, then you have to sort of govern like a grown-up and sort of say, no, 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 that's not how these things actually work.
And has that disappointment, though, has that led to a situation where people are much more cynical about the whole idea of what used to be called government 2.0, of civic engagement through digital tools?
Again, I think there have been some wins and losses. I think there have been some good moves in the right direction of sort of opening up some data and having government departments share information. But it hasn't been perhaps the revolution that people have hoped for. Is there some frustration? I think there certainly is. I think there's the sense in which things didn't happen nearly as quickly as people might have hoped. But I would say that maybe that's a general characterization of how people who support Obama tend to feel about the presidency.
Ethan Zuckerman. Now, perspective number three comes from another familiar voice, David Weinberger. We had him on our Cyber Utopian program last week. Dr. Weinberger is currently with Harvard University's Berkman Center for Internet and Society, but he has in the past been an internet advisor to three presidential campaigns. David Weinberger.
It's really hard to change government, and especially federal government. The government, I would expect to be one of the last institutions that manages to take up the opportunities in a deep way of the web, because we have constitutions that would have to be changed. We have a representative democracy that is based around the idea that very few people get to speak, because that's the way it used to work when somebody had to, you know, get on a horse and ride to the Capitol to vote. That's enshrined not only in our norms but it's actually in our Constitution. So it's really hard to change government. We have seen, especially with the Obama administration, a pretty interesting set of experiments and occasional reforms. One of the very first things that President Obama did when he was inaugurated, when he took office, was to sign an open government bill. And, oh, it's not perfect, and the implementation has been certainly, nevertheless, the fact that this is now the rule is, I think, wonderful, that we now assume transparency, that data will be made available unless there's a good reason not to. You see this in the State Department and even in the intelligence services, where there is a very conscious, explicit move away from a need-to-know culture to a need-to-share culture. And this is coming from the top as well as from the bottom. That's pretty remarkable, and it's taking years, but we're seeing very concrete things happen in those regards. There has been a spirit of innovation and a willingness to try things and fail in the federal government, in the executive branch, that would have been unthinkable. Would have been unthinkable 4 or 8 years ago. And even in the petitions initiative on the White House site, where 25,000 people sign a petition on any topic, a citizen-generated petition, the government will respond. A larger thing is the requirement that federal agencies make all their data public, that the default will be this data will be made public in ways that machines can process it so that anybody who wants this data can get at it and run it through a computer mill and find whatever they want and contribute back. That is a serious inversion of the old norm and the old standard. So structural change is really hard for good and bad reasons in government, but there has been enough going on that I think it's reasonable to continue to talk about government 2.0.
It was a creed written into the founding documents that declared the destiny of a nation. Yes, we can. It was whispered by slaves and abolitionists as they blazed the trail toward freedom. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
There's this notion that the internet empowers more people and that the presidential campaigns like the Obama campaign have been in the business of using the internet to empower their supporters. I think we have to unpack that and be very careful before we make the same mistake that we made 4 years ago, which is that the internet is just a technology. It doesn't do anything on its own. It's what people do with it. It absolutely does open up new possibilities for participation, collaboration, and, you know, for many people who previously didn't have a voice because it was difficult to have an effective voice in the political process, it lowers the barriers to entry, makes it easier if you do want to participate, to do so without necessarily having a very big checkbook or already being famous, which used to be the prerequisites for mattering in politics in the old broadcast era.
Mika Sifri from the influential website Tech President.
But just because that is the case, it doesn't follow automatically that suddenly millions or tens of millions of Americans are genuinely, really fully empowered to be active participants and deciders in this process. They don't have to sit on the sidelines, but I think many of them still expect that at the end of the day, what they're doing is handing their vote to a leader who is then going to make the decisions on their behalf and actually do the heavy lifting. And so, you know, we're still in this transition from being kind of passive consumers to active participants in our own democratic decision-making. Now, it is in the interest of these campaigns to encourage the sense among their supporters that they are being empowered when they write them a check or make a few phone calls on their behalf or knock on a few doors or those sorts of things. And if you believe that getting Barack Obama back in office or electing Mitt Romney is a way to empower yourself, then sure. But the fact is that after we get through this election and we go back to the business of governing, and then people wonder, why doesn't anything change? Why does so little change? And the answer is because there are sort of permanent organization of money, of concentrated money, of various industry groups and entrenched interests and that can afford to have full-time lobbyists swarming all over Washington, D.C., and the average voter does not do that. So when the day comes when people will organize themselves to have continued voice, to maintain a continued eye on what's going on in D.C., not just on election day, but every other day of the year, then we can say that the internet is actually empowering more people to have a meaningful say in the process.
Mika Sifri's view on the potential of both Barack Obama and digital tools to change the political process has certainly moderated over the past 4 years. But in fairness, he was cautious about predicting the future when we first spoke with him way back in 2009. even reminding us at the time of the axiom, politicians campaign in poetry and govern in prose. But as you can hear, he's still a believer in long-term change.
You know, it's almost like flash mobs hitting Washington, D.C. You know, there will be a momentary issue that grabs public attention, and we are beginning to see through social media, whether it's people all rallying around a particular hashtag or all bombarding a particular congressional office or organization with protest calls and emails. I mean, the biggest example of this was at the beginning of the year when Congress, both sides of Congress, at the behest of the content industries and Hollywood, was on the path to passing a really draconian piece of legislation to stop online piracy that would have, along the way, broken the internet as we know it. And there was this mass uprising that was really came from all directions, not just from companies like Google, but from nonprofit sites like Wikipedia and upstarts like Tumblr, who rallied their users by the millions to call and email Congress, and it was somewhere in the range of 12 to 20 million contacts were made in this 1 week in January, and you know Congress immediately backpedaled. What that suggested to us is that there is more power here than has yet really been normalized into the system, that many, many more people, you know, when faced with that kind of an issue, can be spurred to action. But for the most part, we still see most of our political process is still largely a spectator sport for people. And these bursts of activity, I think, are they're tantalizing because the scale is getting bigger and bigger, and a lot of people are learning how to do this.
Another interesting point that you've recently made, going back to the established political campaigns, is that you've said that campaigns used to use the web to inform people about policies and to connect them to each other. But now they're increasingly trying to find information about people that they can tailor the information that their potential supporters want to hear. How has that change occurred, and why has it really occurred?
What we've seen happen over the last 8 years since the internet and network technology became a factor in how people participate politically in the United States is a real dramatic shift from the sort of empowered individual activist, the blogger, you know, the people who kind of lifted themselves up and said, I want to support a candidate, say, like Howard Dean, for example, and the campaigns, in many cases, accepting this support and kind of allowing a lot of flowering of all kinds of individual initiative. And the mantra was, to get more power from the people, you kind of have to let go some control. Since then, we've seen a kind of new sophistication on the part of the big campaigns where they don't want to give up control, but they really do want to tap the power of the net to mobilize many more people on behalf of that campaign. And the way they're doing this is with micro-targeting. And what the first thing they have to do is figure out who are their supporters, who are their potential supporters, what are their characteristics, what kinds of messages will resonate with these people, who are the best people to deliver those messages to them, and how to do that in a way where people don't even realize that they're, you know, being advertised to in a sophisticated new way. And that is what we're seeing. You know, there was a lot of talk at the beginning of this election about how Facebook was going to be so important as the platform where the election would be fought out. And I said, you know, this is not the Facebook election. It's all about the data that the campaigns can collect when people visit their website or when people sign on as a supporter through Facebook. Then they get all kinds of other information, such as through Facebook, your entire social graph, who your friends are, you know, what your preferences are. If you've put information into your public profile in Facebook, and then you click and say you want to sign on to the Obama campaign app or the Romney campaign app, now those campaigns have the ability to draw on all this data that Facebook has been collecting and keeping on you. And you've sort of vaguely said okay to this, but most people have no idea.
Hi, I'm Mario from Brisbane. I work in health and information technology, and I need to understand where these fields are heading. I know that with the right insights, we can shape our future. And Future Tense on RN and Radio Australia helps me to shape mine.
I'm sure you've heard the buzz. Social media may be the next big thing. What's it all about? This is Social Media in Plain English. Let's take a visit to Scoop.
I think that social media actually may have become much more important for local politicians, where it becomes very, very important to make sure that local government seems accessible. One of the figures who's really sort of emerged as an odd form of social media superstar is the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, Cory Booker, who spends an enormous amount of time on Twitter, uses Twitter as sort of his main way to take in constituent complaints and sort of try to route them to different parts of his government. And so I think for officials who are sort of able to manage feedback from a community of people, you know, the size of a small city, now that, you know, probably doesn't work. I think if we all tweeted to Barack Obama and sort of said, you know, we'd really like this and not that, that would end up being sort of overwhelming. I think on sort of the national political stage, you know, now you're really seeing things like Twitter play some of the same role as blogs. They end up being the place for media scrutiny. They end up being the place where we sort of fact check and push back and sort of question what was going on. I think part of this is, look, you know, in 2004, when people sort of said, let's campaign for Howard Dean using the internet, that sounded really radical. When, you know, Barack Obama said, look, we're going to make small donations and doing that on the internet, a center of our campaign, that sounded really radical. But 4 or 8 years back on all of those, then we sort of look at this and say, well, that's just what we do now. And I think social media is just what we do now. It's obviously, it's a component of every campaign. It's a component of the fundraising. It may not feel like a revolution simply because it's such an ordinary and straightforward thing to do. And we might even have to just sort of remember to sort of step back 4, 8, 12 years to sort of think about actually quite how radical it is.
More than ever before, presidential candidates in the 2012 election are using digital media to get their messages directly to voters and to motivate supporters. So, who's winning the race on the web and social media?
Now, 4 years ago, just after the last US election, we also spoke with conservative communication strategist Michael Turk, who managed the internet operations for 3 presidential campaigns, and also the Republican National Committee. Back in early 2009, he was profoundly frustrated that many Republicans just didn't get the online and social media world. That was then. What about now? Michael Turk.
Conservatives have, you know, sort of over the last 4 years certainly woken up to getting more involved on social media and getting more involved in the internet generally, and I think that the elections of 2008, the elections of 2010 have certainly shown that you ignore the internet at your own peril. So now it's no longer a question of if we, you know, should do these things. It's certainly a question of how do we do these things, and the, simply the number of social networks and the number of different options available to reach out to voters is certainly just ballooned with all the different social networks and video distribution channels and things like Tumblr and StumbledUpon and Reddit and all of these other different things that people are consuming now. It certainly encouraged conservatives to get in the game. Everybody's trying to make use of every platform, certainly. I think that in many cases they're making better use of one or the other, or there are, you know, more strides being made in one area as opposed to another. But I think that everybody is certainly trying to figure out the best way to reach the voter and frankly, the best way to reach the activist and to motivate the activist.
Now, last time around, of course, Obama had an enormous lead in terms of his usage of the internet and social media on his competitor at that stage, John McCain. Mm-hmm. What's the situation like between Romney and Obama?
Well, I think that that's certainly no longer true. While the Obama campaign is certainly, you know, doing everything that it can online, and there's a general sense that, that they're continuing to do innovative things, I don't think that there is the difference between the two campaigns as pronounced as there was in 2008. The Romney campaign has a very talented team of operatives that are in there working on their online stuff, and so they're much more engaged. The campaign takes it much more seriously than the McCain campaign did. They really are doing a lot of really interesting, innovative stuff in many ways that compares to the Obama campaign. And I think what the Obama campaign is finding is, and I think we talked about this 4 years ago, what the Obama campaign is finding is that the challenges of running an internet campaign as the incumbent president are dramatically different from what the challenges are when you're a challenger candidate.
in that there's a lot more scrutiny of every word that you say. There's a lot more people paying attention, and it's a lot harder to be sort of edgy and confrontational and really do kind of the things that that really make the internet more of a challenger medium. I think in some ways the Romney campaign hasn't capitalized on all of those things, but I think that, the Obama campaign is certainly finding a lot different environment than they had 4 years ago.
There's a lot more targeting, isn't there, of individual voters, trying to work out what messages will appeal to particular groups and particular individuals. Is that correct?
Absolutely, and the tools have, you know, obviously improved over the last several years, and so as a result, the ability to target is greatly improved. So there's a lot more use of regional targeting, so targeting for sort of specific geographic areas. There's a lot of demographic targeting, so targeting, you know, female voters, you know, between 35 and 55, or male voters between 18 and 40, or whatever those demographics happen to be. So there's a lot more capability in reaching sort of specific voters. And that's not to mention, you know, the websites that allow you to really sort of get into deeper profiles like Facebook, for instance, where you can actually target not only based on sort of, you know, generic characteristics of age and gender, but in very specific characteristics of people who like a particular candidate or like a particular party or have particular interests based on the stuff that they've posted on their Facebook profile of, you know, things like education and things like tax policy and those sorts of things. You can get very specific in targeting those voters in a way that you really, you know, didn't have the option to several years ago.
Now, it's an enormously connected world, much more so than it was 4 years ago. We're still, though, seeing instances, aren't we, where politicians forget how connected the world is, forget that it's always on, that this is a new media environment.
The perfect example of that was recently with the Romney video that was leaked from the fundraiser. Candidates still tend to forget that there's always a camera rolling, there's always a microphone that's turned on. And it seems like not a single election goes by when somebody doesn't have to relearn that same lesson, which is kind of unfortunate. You'd think that, you know, after a while, people would understand that you can't be speaking one way to one group and a completely different way to another group. You can't be pitting one group against another because those things are going to come out. Nothing's secret anymore. And especially in the world of politics, everybody is looking for that unguarded moment to sort of release and to show the world what's going on with that. And so as a result, it's very much important for, while that wasn't necessarily, it was, you know, the video was released via YouTube, but it was a professional sort of media organization that got hold of the video, as opposed to just being somebody on Twitter. But the distinction being that those tools are available to anybody now, so you never know who the person is that's going to be sort of showing that video. You never know, you know, who the person in the crowd is who's going to be the next, you know, internet famous the next day for having discovered that unguarded moment where you let slip, you know, your real thoughts on something. So candidates have to really sort of understand that that's the reality of the world that we live in, and they need to, you know, to understand that they need to be, you know, honest and transparent and be the same person in front of any crowd, and to be honest about, you know, sort of what they are and what they believe.
Michael Turk, 4 years on, thank you very much for the update.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.